Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman.
And I'm Steve Curwood. Scientists say the planet is losing species at a rate not seen in 65 million years, not since the massive dinosaur die-off. Now, after 18 years of intensive international negotiations designed to save the world's biodiversity, diplomats have finally come up with an agreement.
Negotiators from 193 nations met in Nagoya, Japan. 2 weeks of round-the-clock discussions came down to a middle-of-the-night nail-biting session that led to the historic deal. Jane Smart was at the UN Convention on Biodiversity Summit. She's director of the Biodiversity Conservation Group at the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. Dr. Smart joins me from Geneva, Switzerland. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you very much.
I understand it was a frantic night of last-minute negotiations. Were you up at 2 a.m. when it concluded?
Oh, yes, I was in the room. It was all very, very exciting, seeing this big step forward for nature.
Actually, as I understand it, it's three steps forward.
Three steps forward. So on the table, there was a kind of a package deal. The big plan to save nature to be achieved by 2020, a new protocol for access to genetic resources, and also a big plan to pay for everything. And the parties had agreed they would go for all three or nothing. So that required quite a lot of negotiation right up until the last minute.
Let's talk about the protocol, the Nagoya Protocol, it's being called now, this notion of sharing the access to genetic resources.
Yeah, so for a long time, the developed world, the North, mostly speaking, has enjoyed access to the biodiversity or the nature, the species occurring in developing countries. And there's been no payback for those countries. So what's really positive about this new protocol is that there now has to be a payback. So if a company wants to take, a species of fungus or a species of mammal or frog and isolate a chemical from it and develop a drug, for instance, they are now going to have to negotiate with that country a fair deal for the sharing of the benefits. In other words, money.
Let's talk about saving nature. They came up with 20 specific targets, as I understand it.
That's right, 20 targets for 2020 to try and halt the loss of biodiversity or nature in 10 years' time.
Well, previously, they were supposed to save something like 10% of the oceans by 2012. And so far, I think it's 1%.
Yeah, that's a pretty dismal one. So that was a target set and not reached. And we're at 1% of that 70% of the planet that's ocean. But a new target has been set for 10% by 2020. And actually, that's not a bad target. So we have to increase by 10 times what we have now. And the way around this is to set up marine protected areas and ensure that, you know, we enforce the protection of those areas to bring back fish stocks from near collapse in some cases.
How much land do they want to protect?
On the land, the target is a little bit weak. It says 17%, and some parties have reached that already. The current value globally is around 13%, so that isn't as ambitious as we would have liked it in IUCN. We would have liked to have seen a further stretch on that one.
Well, somebody's going to have to pay for all these ambitions. How much money is on the table? How much money is going to be needed?
Clearly, we need more money. I mean, at the moment, it's pretty dismal. So we have $3 billion a year US dollars going into biodiversity-related aid is the technical term. Clearly, this amount needs to increase.
Japan came up and pledged, $2 billion. Why would they do that?
I think Japan really wanted a success. And that's great. You know, I'm so glad Japan hosted this meeting because they really, really wanted this to work. And without their leadership, it wouldn't have worked. As you know, the U.S. is not a party to the convention. That's a great shame. Everybody involved feels it would be a wonderful thing if the U.S. were to ratify the Biodiversity Convention.
I hear a but there.
Well, they were in the room. Interestingly, people from the U.S. were there. But I think the process for ratifying conventions in the U.S., as I understand it, is quite long and involved. I think, well, IUCN and other organizations have to keep applying a little pressure in the hope that President Obama will place this up the list of his priorities.
Can a plan to hopefully save the world's biodiversity by 2020, can that have any hope of success without the United States?
That's a very, very good question. Well, the United States are going to have to play ball in some way or another, because the access and benefit sharing protocol will apply to the recipient countries that they want to go into and take biodiversity from, if you like. So the idea is to bring to a halt this so-called biopiracy. And I think the United States, whether they've ratified the convention or not, will be subject to those laws as they gradually come into place.
It's taken 18 years of intensive negotiations to get where we are now, coming up with targets. How confident are you that 10 years from now we'll be able to see tangible results from this conference, that they'll meet the targets?
Well, you know, I think in my business, working for IUCN, you have to be a bit of an optimist, and your glass has to be half full. And although we've failed, let's be honest, we failed in 2010 to meet the so-called 2010 target, as I say, I'm more ambitious this time around because there's been more buy-in, I would say, by governments, more understanding of the issues. The imperative is there. You can feel that people are starting to understand what might happen if we don't meet this target, which is reaching these so-called tipping points and seeing big changes in ecosystem functioning that really will impact us and the way we live. It's already happening. I mean, if we think of the Pakistani floods, there's no doubt that deforestation made the impact of those far worse. The tsunami wouldn't have been so damaging to people had the mangroves not been so destroyed in that part of Asia. And there are many, many other examples like this. And the knowledge is starting to, I think, have traction with governments.
Dr. Smart, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Jane Smart is with the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature.